Question. What is Canada's greatest contribution to the world of comedy? Is it Saturday Night Live? I mean, Lorne Michaels has created a veritable comedy empire. He's run SNL for almost 50 years and launched the careers of dozens of the most famous comedians in the world, including fellow Canadians Dan Aykroyd, Mike Myers, and Norm Macdonald. But how many people even watch SNL in Singapore? Samantha Bee may have broken the boys' club of late-night political satire. But did she ever do a bit where a politician goes to shake your hand and it's all slimy with boogers? Nathan Fielder may have redrawn the lines of reality itself, exposing the absurdity of modern life with his bizarre, intricate pranks. But did he ever hide in a toilet and then pop his head up right when someone's about to go poo? Professor Stephen Leacock, the Mark Twain of Canada, may have delightfully tweaked society's foibles in deftly constructed literary prose and written the seminal text Humor, Its Theory and Technique. But did he ever put a farting pregnant woman on a park bench and then she just won't stop farting? No. None of them come close to the achievements of Just for Laughs Gags, the wordless, hidden-camera prank comedy show, primarily shot in Montreal, that has been running for 23 seasons. It is the most exported, most watched series in Canadian history. It's been broadcast in over 130 countries and on 75 airlines. Now, you can say that Just for Laughs Gags is stupid, that it's juvenile, that it's often sexist. You might agree with critic David Barry, who called it Canada's most heinous cultural creation. You might say that, like, if it's possible to be too smart for anything, you are certainly too smart for Just for Laughs Gags. But what you cannot say is that Just for Laughs Gags doesn't work. It works in Singapore and it works in Saudi Arabia. It works in France and it works in Finland. It speaks the language of comedy in a universal tongue. Kind of like how, no matter where you are in the world, you can communicate basic things by pointing and grunting. But Just for Laughs Gags may have jumped out of its last bush. On Tuesday, March 5th, Group Juste pour Rire Incorporated announced that it is seeking creditor protection under Canada's Bankruptcy and Insolvency Act. The 2024 Just for Laughs Festival has been canceled. Does this mean curtains for gags? We don't know. I did speak to Pierre Girard, the creator of Just for Laughs Gags, and he told me that he is currently trying to buy back the intellectual property for gags from the Just for Laughs company before the whole enterprise is dead and gone forever. And given the sensitivities of those negotiations, he would not speak with me for today's show. But others did. We spoke to an executive behind gags. We spoke to a director of gags. We spoke to somebody who performed in gags. We even spoke to somebody who was a victim of Just for Laughs Gags. Our own colleague, in fact. And collectively, they will tell you a story that must be told. The oral history of Just for Laughs Gags.
Oh my God, I was with the gags ground floor. I remember when it was born. I remember how it was born. It was not an easy birth. It was a lot of work and convincing and conniving on behalf of the guy who basically put it all together. What is my name? No, I'm Andy Nolman. When the gag started, I was, I don't even remember my title at the time, but it was like the guy in charge. And I remember Pierre Girard, who basically is the godfather of the gags, coming to me and telling me what he wanted to do. And he was getting blowback because what Pierre wanted to do was a candid camera gag show. And Gilbert Rozon, who was, you know, the big head of the company, said, you know what, we had just come off a show called Surprise, Surprise, which was a practical joke show in Canada and in France.
Faut dire qu'au moment où s'est déroulé le drame qui va suivre, M. Pierre Péladeau était parti au Venezuela déjà depuis 15 jours et s'est élevé à 5 heures le matin.
And we made a lot of money on it. It was a huge, huge hit. The gags were mega gags. They all cost a fortune. They were big, big stunts. And we made a lot of money with it, but Gilbert felt that the gags run was over. Despite the fact that he loved the practical jokes, he said, we made our money. We've basically squeezed every bit of juice we can out of the practical joke. Forget it. So he said no to Pierre's project. And Pierre didn't want to take no for an answer. What he did, he scrimped and cut and was able to shave a little bit off different productions and come up with a very, very small amount of money to make a gags pilot. The Canadian industry has a thing called ACTRA. And what ACTRA is the union for the artists and performers and, you know, people who are involved in television production. In Quebec, it's Union des Artistes. If you uttered one word, the smallest word, oui, no, whatever, le, la, one word, the rate went up. So what Pierre did, out of necessity, out of total necessity, is he did his pilot without words. So this way he was able to produce the pilot episode with the very limited amount of money he had.
Just for Laughs gags. It hit the perfect time. My name is Christo Sirligas. I used to work at Just for Laughs. I was there for 12 years. Right after university, I started working for the distribution arm of Just for Laughs, and then eventually was the vice president of sales. It started in the 1990s, early 2000s, when non-scripted programming throughout the world was becoming very popular.
At the time, what was huge was Mr. Bean. They suddenly realized, hey, you know, we can sell this to airlines, and because of the fact that it's nonverbal, any airline in the world can play it. So Mr. Bean, as big as it was on television, it was equally as big on the airlines. So the airlines were saying, hey, you know what? We need another Mr. Bean show. And lo and behold, what was there was Just for Laughs gags.
What made Just for Laughs an incredible success was the fact that it was nonverbal. So there was no need to dub or subtitle. You know, if you were on an airline, you'd be hearing passengers laughing a few rows over, and you're wondering why they're laughing. Either they're watching it on a VOD or on the main screen, and you got the joke if you didn't have any headphones on, right? And that's what made Just for Laughs gags so very popular.
So what happens? Who flies? People going on vacation, business people, but you know who else flies? Television executives fly. And at the time, some of the screens were personal screens, but a lot of them were those mass screens where it was at the front of the plane and the plane played gags and people are going out of their minds laughing and the exec is sitting there saying, oh my God, people are going apeshit over this show. I gotta buy it. So suddenly we had a hit in countries all over the world and, you know, the rest is history. I had so many striking memories of the gags, most notably people coming up to me and saying, you're not going to believe what happened to me today. I was coming to visit you, or I was going out to eat, or I was visiting my kid, or whatever I was doing. I was going shopping, and I got pranked, but I got caught by the Just for Laughs gags team. So many people I knew were caught, which was amazing, and they all told me about it.
A friend of mine was pranked months before 9/11. He was walking to work downtown, smoking a cigarette, when a guy asked him for a light. My friend took out his lighter and the guy opened his jacket. He was strapped with dynamite. My friend freaked and took the lighter back. He signed the waiver, but not too long afterwards, 9/11 happened, and the skit never aired. Username Clegg on Reddit.
Classic. Someone asks you to man their stand while they run to do something, and then you're stuck dealing with some weird scenario. The gag was that this couple, including a very obviously fake pregnant woman, came to play the game at my stand, and every time they would succeed, they would dramatically bump bellies and the lady would look in pain. Not too sure who came up with that one. I didn't realize how much I'd picked up on the details of the Just for Laughs gag style from watching it as a kid, but it was instantly very obvious to me that that's what it was right from the start. I was torn between faking a reaction or not, but mostly I was bracing myself for the possibility that the gag was going to end with that woman going into labor, and I was going to have to figure out how to deal with that. User, DP Coco.
My name is Dagan Taylor. I think I saw the show for the first time when I was out of university. And then a couple of years later, they were looking for editors at Just for Laughs. So I came in as an editor back in 2005. And after about a year or two, I pitched my directing services to the producer, and I started directing the show. It was just the greatest summer job ever, basically. You're out there in a surveillance van pranking these people, and it's pretty funny at times, pretty frustrating at times, but ultimately, just to know there was that many people laughing at it worldwide would always make it worth it.
Another thing that was very genius of what the creator Pierre Girard did was that he didn't color correct the footage to make it look almost cinematic, to make it look almost epic. And there was a huge pushback. A lot of networks would tell him, no, you gotta make it rich. And he's like, nope. And they'd be like, why? He goes, because it doesn't look like home video. And that's what it's meant to be. It's meant to be that you could easily shot this. And it has that feel that it's human level.
I think at first, they do more with less. At first, they shoot 4 gags a day. By the end, we shoot 2 gags a day. One of the main evolutions that took place is we started doing what we called cutaway shots. So we'd capture everything that happened with the participant or the victim or the target. And then we'd take the actors and we'd get some key shots with them that we could intercut with the gag. So once we started doing that, that allowed us to take the storytelling further because now you're in a situation where you're basically shooting a fiction. So once we started mixing the two, the storytelling was better. That was a big evolution that took place around 2005, 2006, I'd say. And then I think one of the other major evolutions was just the writing. The beginning, there'd be a single prank, a single joke. And we reached a point where we'd almost always have one prank lead to another situation within the same gag. There'd be an evolution of the stakes, an evolution of the prank, whatever it was, which would add to the joke. So you'd have 2 or 3 things in the sketch that might make you laugh, whereas the first years, you'd just have one and it would be over.
My name is Aviva Lassard. I'm a producer here at Candleland, and I'm a Montrealer. One day, I was taking a little walk just on Prince Arthur Street, which is a pedestrian street in Montreal. I could tell that it was Just for Laughs. I could tell that they were filming people as well, and as I was walking by, they made eye contact and they ushered me in, and they said, "Would you like to participate?" And I definitely did. They explained the sketch to me. The actual prank was, I was being interviewed by a fake journalist and they were asking me questions, and as it was going on, you could tell that the interviewer, the journalist, was getting a bit upset with the cameraman. He was not really doing his job properly. He kind of kept dropping the boom mic.
I'm Rochelle. So one day, like summer, back maybe 10 years ago, I'm walking back at home and I'm waiting for the light to turn green. And on the other side of the street, I spot this young nun. She stops me and she waves at me. She says, "I'm sorry, could you please, I'm waiting for someone to give me a hand to carry a crucifix up the stairs of this church. So would you have like a second to give me a hand? It will just take a minute." You know, it's just a minute, like, of course. So I follow her into the church.
And it started to escalate, and the journalist started to get very upset, and the cameraman started to taunt her with his boom mic by, like, dropping it on her head.
I grab the back of the crucifix, she grabs the front, we carry it up the stairs, we get into the church, we carry the crucifix at the back of the altar, we slide it into this block with a hole in it. So she says, "Thank you very much, have a nice day." And I turn around and I go to leave and I hear like this big bang.
So it escalated in her grabbing the thing on the boom mic, which was, I think, referred to as a dead cat. It's sort of like this gray, brown, fluffy. It's pretty much the shape of a long toque, let's say, that protects a microphone from wind, sound, and noise. So she grabbed that and yanked it over the top of the boom operator's head.
So I turn around and I see the crucifix is fallen. So I run back behind the altar to help her. And I notice at my feet there is a guy with like a spiny crown on his head and a white loincloth. And the nun like looks at him and she says, "Jesus, I told you not to nap here." And I'm like, I just fell for something. And like before I knew it, just like on TV, there's all these people who pop out from every single piece of furniture in the room and all point at the camera laughing. And I'm like, damn you guys. So that's it. I swore that I would never fall for a Just for Laughs prank. And I totally fell for it. Hook, line, and sinker. They got me, and they got me good.
You're asking me if any of the Just for Laughs gags was quote-unquote scripted? I don't believe so. And I'm not sure where you're getting that information.
So actually, you might think that this was an organic experience, but no, they had actually told me as I was walking down the street and they enticed me into participating in this. And they told me how I was supposed to react to this series of events playing out in front of me. They're like, respond in surprise, like respond being very confused, pretend you don't know what's about to happen. So I was acting the whole time and I got feedback that I did a pretty good job. So it was all a setup.
I can't be sure because I wasn't on every shoot, but the shoots I was on were 100% real. It was people piégé in French, caught in the act every time.
It's a fair question. The gags, the great majority of what you're watching are candid reactions. There are some circumstances. Sometimes what happens is a person is aware we're shooting and they'll come in without us knowing they're aware. And we'll do the gag with them, and then after we'll find out they were aware. So that could happen. On some occasions, an action that's taking place turns out to be dangerous on the day we're doing it. It wasn't necessarily planned to be done. Like, there was a fail in the planning. Well, now we're on the terrain, now we're doing it, and there's something, there's an element that could be unsafe for the person. That could be a circumstance where we might ask people to participate. Again, it's rare, because I really feel, what's the point of the show if we were to shoot it like that? I really feel that. And as a director, it's incredibly disappointing if you have to send in a plant or a stage. It's incredibly disappointing. So I would say it's an imperfect world. There are moments where occasionally there might be a plant for different reasons. But the vast majority of what you're watching is candid. And that's why it works well. And you see the difference. If you do try to work with plants, it doesn't work well. It's never somebody that gets booked as an actor to come in and do the gag. If we're in a situation where we're trying to save the sketch, we just ask someone on the street if they could help us.
Back when I was at Dawson, 2005, 2007-ish, there were some movers on Atwater that were bringing a long rolled-up carpet out of a truck. They blocked the sidewalk so you couldn't pass. Then you'd notice that there were someone's legs sticking out of the end of the carpet roll. Pretty inconvenient when you're just trying to get to class. Who am I kidding? Nobody goes to class in CJEP. User, Vesper.
I ended up stumbling into the filming of one in the plateau. I found out I made the editing cut literally years later when a friend called me one night saying, Dude, I just saw you on TV. You never told me you were on Just for Laughs. Those all caps are an understatement, by the way. This guy was super duper excited, like he just found out I played Batman in the last Batman. But because of that experience, there was another time in the plateau where I was riding my bike at like 10 a.m. and saw this pretty hot chick in flip-flops who was trying to change a tire or something in the middle of a suspiciously open stretch of unparked cars. I was like, nah, not falling for it, mate, and pedaled by despite her waves and pleas. I mean, maybe she really was in trouble, but I didn't want another phone call like that. User, Jerry Hat Trick.
There was one time when the target, the participant, hurt themselves because there was an event. It was an unusual event. Like they were opening a sport bag and an entire football team emerges from the sport bag. But the lady, she backed up and her foot missed the sidewalk and she fell back and she hit her head on the sidewalk. And I can just remember that moment, seeing her fall out of my screen, you know, in the truck. My heart just sank and I ran out and the ambulance had to come. And fortunately, she wasn't really injured. She did go to the hospital. We did come to a financial agreement, which was, you know, she was rewarded for what happened. Like, it wasn't her fault, obviously, and everyone was happy at the end. But that moment, to feel the responsibility, that was tough. That was tough. That was a bad day.
Sometimes it can be violent. I mean, I received one slap in the face, but a big one. My name is Denis Levasseur. I'm an actor, and I'm doing gags since 2002. Yeah, there is some violence. Sometimes people, you know, didn't like the gag or they are too much in it. But, you know, that is few. You know, there's sometimes, I don't like the gag. I don't like the gag. It's not funny. But most of the time, people laugh and they, oh, my God, there's a camera. Oh, no. Yeah. You adjust for laugh. It's very fun. And people like that.
Do I think that Just for Laughs gags is a funny show, you know?
Well, I have to be honest with you. After spending so many years of my life in comedy, the bloom is off the comedic rose. After a while, you just know how everything is done. The LCD, the lowest common denominator element of the gags, still makes it hilarious. And as much as I watch this stuff, and much as I say it's not really my cup of tea, it's still funny.
It's a show that will stand the test of time. Demonstrate Just for Laughs gag is funny.
Oh my God, I can't believe I'm actually going to say this, but sometimes I watch sports highlight reels and you see the shot of the, you know, the football going in and missing the receiver, but it hits the guy holding the boom mic on the stands and it hits him in the groin and you just laugh.
Hans Moleman Productions presents Man Getting Hit by Football.
This contest is over. Give that man the $10,000.
This isn't America's Funniest Home Videos.
But the ball is groin. It works at so many levels.
Look, I know it's not high art, and I know a lot of it is, you know, kind of lowbrow, cheap humor. But the fact of the matter was that this was perhaps one of the most popular entertainment exports ever to come out of this country. People laughed. They enjoyed themselves. It may have been silly. It may have been trite, but they had a great time watching this stuff.
We would get emails and letters and even phone calls from viewers who just loved the Just for Laughs gags. You know, maybe a family member or whatnot was ill, and the only time they got together and laughed as a family is when they'd be watching the Just for Laughs gags. And so I made it a point to tell all of my employees to print those emails and keep those letters and just put them in a file folder, and that file folder throughout the years wind up becoming, you know, almost like about 1,000 page, you know, it was like a encyclopedia. The simplicity of the gags and the humor, you know, would give them some sort of comfort in some of the most darkest times of their lives. And that was very important for us.
I mean, if the gags stop, of course, all the teams are stunned. We are very sad. But when I announced that on my Facebook, I receive a lot of email from all around the world. There is was a Bolivian woman. There is a Danish woman. They wrote to me, and I have a lot of messages to say, oh, my God, I lost my husband 2 years ago, and you make me feel alive again. And I realize that show helping people. And I receive a couple of message that I saved them for suicide. I'm sad. I'm sad for sure.
How do I think the show will be remembered? I'm hoping that's going to come back. I mean, Just for Laughs has gone belly up recently. However, I think they're going to come back leaner and meaner. I think there'll probably be another version of the Just for Laughs gags.
If it's gone forever, I will remember it very fondly. I'm very happy that I got to participate in a gag. I feel like secretly my whole life I'd always wanted to be in one.
I mean, yeah, I thought it was funny. Like, and I'm kind of glad in a way that, you know, I'm part of the lore now. It's a cool anecdote to tell people.
Well, I think the legacy of the gags will go on past Just for Laughs for sure. I think it's something that people continue to laugh at across the globe. I hope that it gets picked up by a producer who will continue it. That's still possible from what I understand. Whether I would work on it or not, I don't know. I'd certainly love to work on it again. It's a wonderful format. It's definitely, the gags will definitely live on past Just for Laughs, for sure.
Is it some of my legacy at Just for Laughs? I would hope so. I would hope something very positive and very successful is part of my legacy, although I must say I was more of a bystander and somebody who watched it happen rather than made it happen. But I'll tell you one thing about the gags. What the gags have shown are two things that I think are incredibly positive. The first thing is it shows that, by and large, the general populace are nice people. They will help out. They're usually called in as a good Samaritan, and they usually help out. It's rare that people would run away from being asked for help in a gag situation. That's what we found. And the second thing it says about humanity is, hey, you know what? They like to laugh. They like to laugh. They enjoy it. And yeah, it may not be the most highbrow or the most elegant form of humor, but I'll tell you something. In the end, it provided people with a good laugh. Just for Laughs gags provided people with a good laugh. And I'd rather have a good laugh than a bad laugh. So, if that's the legacy, hallelujah.
That's your Canada Land. I hope you liked it. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read every email you send. Our website is at canadaland.com. Audio production and editing from Tristan Capicchione, who also reported this episode. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Our production coordinator is Andre Proulx. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. I'm your host, Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
Robert Jago, ubiquitous polemicist, member of the Kwantlen First Nation, and co-host of Canada Land's forthcoming Pretendians podcast. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Today on the show, what is up with conservative New Zealanders really being into our Indigenous skyscrapers? And we will play Deadspin Radio Bingo. Welcome to Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news.
A stark new snapshot of Canada's housing crisis tonight shows the number of new homes being built went down last year.
Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre is blaming the Prime Minister for the housing crisis.
The federal government may have trouble getting all parties on board with its one-size-fits-all housing catalogue.
The Squamish Nation is moving forward to have 10.5 acres of this reserve land surrounding much of the south end of Burrard Bridge.
When complete, Sinauk will transform the Kitsilano skyline with 6,000 rental units and 1,200 condos.
An ambitious residential and commercial development project that would make us more visible on the lands again and physically bring us back home.
So there was an op-ed in the Star the other day with the headline, "There's one government in Canada that's actually beating back the housing crisis, and it's not Justin Trudeau's Liberals or Doug Ford's Conservatives." By a process of elimination, you may be able to guess which government is being cited, or maybe you could just guess based on the fact that the piece is by Jessica Bell, who's the housing critic for the Ontario NDP. Except because the NDP doesn't hold power in Ontario, she's actually giving a shout-out to David Eby's NDP in British Columbia, which, you know, congratulating British Columbia on its housing policy seems at least superficially counterintuitive.